from deep inside your radio.
Once again from New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen, this is the kind of perspicacity we look for in our political leadership. Just check this announcement. Former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack, who withdrew as a candidate for the 2008 Democratic presidential nomination this week, saying he couldn't raise enough money to compete with his rivals. He said at his news conference, now he had announced his candidacy way back on November 9th, but he announces this past week, quote, "This process has become to a great extent about money," unquote. Only took him 4 months to figure out that running for president involves a lot of money. That's the perspicacity, ladies and gentlemen, we're looking for. And speaking of which, Dick Cheney was in Australia this week. No, they refused to allow him to have political asylum, which is not the asylum, I think. Anyway, he was visiting Australia, and he delivered the now standard, which, by the way, you know, his stump speech, which is so-called because it stumps all listeners, now characteristically includes a line about if we were to leave Iraq, we would be validating al-Qaeda's strategy. And I'm waiting for somebody to say, excuse me, by kind of skedaddling out of the Afghanistan thing before it was done, proof the Brits are sending more troops to Afghanistan now, this year. By skedaddling out of Afghanistan before it was done and allowing the Pakistanis, our allies, to shelter the Taliban, haven't we been validating al-Qaeda's strategy for the last 4 or 5 years? Sir? Excuse me? Hello? Mr. Cheney? Anyway, he was in Australia, and he lavished praise on Prime Minister Howard. Quote, "Prime Minister Howard and the nation that he serves have never wavered in the war on terror," he said. "America's glad to be fighting alongside a country like Australia." I think he meant Australia, not a country like Australia, because if you look at the globe, anyway, the cute of this particular moment was that the Prime Minister and senior members of his cabinet, including the Foreign Minister, weren't at the appearance of Vice President Cheney when he said that during his only public appearance. It's almost as if they were scared to be seen with him. Why would that be? Because this is election year in Australia, ladies and gentlemen. Buried lead department. New York Times reports that a group of influential Christian conservatives are dissatisfied with the Republican presidential field and uncertain where to turn. It was a meeting of the Council for National Policy, a secret club whose few hundred members include Dr. Dobson, Jerry Falwell, and Grover Norquist of Americans for Tax Reform. That's at the top. Here's the buried lead. Wade, you need the miner's helmet to find this one. And one of our fine listeners donned the said helmet for the occasion. Here it is, way at the bottom. Grover Norquist said he remained open to any of the candidates who spoke to the council or to Mitt Romney, who did not. He argued that with the right promises, any of them could redeem themselves in the eyes of the conservative movement despite their past records, just as some high school students take abstinence pledges even after having had sex. Quote, "It's called secondary virginity," unquote, Mr. Norquist said. Quote, "It is a big movement in high school and also available for politicians," unquote. Don't tell the plastic surgeons is all I have to say. Hello, welcome to the show.
I'd like to say a few words in defense of our country. These people aren't bad, nor are they mean. Now the leaders we have, while they're the worst that we've had, are hardly the worst this poor world has seen. Let's turn history's pages, shall we? Take the Caesars, for example. While in the first few of them, they were sleeping with their sisters, stashing little boys in swimming pools and burning down the city. And one of them named his own horse to be council of the empire. That's like vice president or something. Now, that's not a very good example, is it? And here's one, the Spanish Inquisition. Put people in a terrible position. I don't even like to think about it. Sometimes I like to think about it. Just a few words. Defense of our country. This time at the top could be coming to an end. Now we don't want their love. Respect, at this point, it's pretty much out of the question, but time like these, we sure could use a friend. Hitler, Stalin, men who need no introduction. King Leopold of Belgium, that's right. Everyone thinks he's so great. Well, he owned the Congo, and he tore it up, too. Took the diamonds, took the silver, took the gold. Know what he left him with? Malaria. The president once said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Now it seems like we're supposed to be afraid. It's patriotic, in fact, and color-coded. What are we supposed to be afraid of? Why, of being afraid. That's what terror means, doesn't it? That's what it used to mean. Pisses me off a little when I think that this Supreme Court's gonna outlive me. Couple young Italian fellas and a brother on the court now, too. But I defy you. Anywhere in the world, defy me, two Italians as tight ass as the two Italians we got. And as for the brother, well, Pluto's not a planet anymore either. The end of an empire. It's messy at best. This empire's ending. Like all the rest. Like the Spanish Armada. Drift on the sea. We drift in the land of the brave, in the home of the free. Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. In Diyala Province, northeast of Baghdad, where Sunnis and Shiites are battling for supremacy, the U.S. government has contracted the job of promoting democracy to a Pakistani citizen who's never lived or worked in a democracy. This according to the Washington Post. The management of reconstruction projects in the province has been assigned to a border patrol commander with no reconstruction experience. The task of communicating with the embassy in Baghdad has been handed off to a man with no background in drafting diplomatic cables. The post of agriculture advisor has gone unfilled because the U.S. Department of Agriculture doesn't have one to send. The people our government has sent to Iraq are all dedicated, well-meaning people, but are they really the right people, the best people for the job? Asks a retired Foreign Service officer who until last month headed the team in Diyala. If you can't get experts, it's really hard to do an expert job. Hey, tell us about it in New Orleans, sir. Says Senator Richard Lugar regarding the situation of the lack of talented or experienced civilians to head civilian posts in the new Iraq. Quote, there has been real inertia and myopia. That would be good names for two of the three, you know, when Iraq breaks up into three countries. Inertia and myopia would be good names for two of them. We've not really approached this in the right way, says Senator Lugar, hawking a Lugar at us. And perhaps on a related subject, if you can't get the talented civilians, get somebody you know. Dateline Baghdad, in his latest remarkable political reincarnation, one-time U.S. favorite Ahmad Chalabi has secured a position inside the Iraqi government that could help determine whether the surge succeeds. In a new post created earlier this year, and this year is not that old, Chalabi will serve as an intermediary between Baghdad residents and the Iraqi and U.S. security forces. The position is meant to help Iraqis arrange reimbursement for damage to their cars and homes. That's right, he'll be handling funds. I bet he's good at that. He was a banker until the Jordanians found him guilty of felony fraud, bank fraud. But that's just the Jordanians. The reimbursements are to recompense people whose damage may be caused by the security sweeps in the hope that they can still like us. You know? Yeah, we bombed your house, but we paid you. Well, we gave the money to Ahmad Chalabi to pay you. So what's the problem? Yeah, indeed, what's the problem? Ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for me to read the trades for you. It's actually a story about the trade from a consumer newspaper, though. It's going a little public. From the Boston Globe. Cell phone screen is today's hip billboard. Yeah. Throw it in the ocean now. You've been warned. I'll read it for you. Then you've been warned. In an ad-saturated world, the cell phone screen is a nearly pristine canvas. But a number of Boston-area companies are helping to transform the device that 220 million people are loath to leave at home into a personal, pocket-sized billboard, hawking everything from the latest ringtone to Fabio-favored, I Can't Believe It's Not Butter. Quote, "We're calling the phone the brand in your hand." Says Farina Sultan, associate professor of marketing at Northeastern University. What's an academic doing hawking this instead of studying it? Helping all of us. The challenge, Sultan says, will be to produce an advertisement for the phone that excites the person holding it. Oh, I'll get excited. Don't worry about it, babe. I'll get real excited. The cell phone ad space is poised to grow given the increasing speed of wireless networks. And a cluster of Boston startup companies have positioned themselves as the middlemen who bring brands to the screen. One more reason to love Beantown. Boston-based NPocket Incorporated is placing banner ads on Sprint's mobile browser homepage. Third Screen Media builds cell phone-sized banner ads for Burger King and Toyota. U-Locate Communications and Framing a Mass is unveiling mobile advertising that uses global positioning technology to send ads to phone users in specific locations. Hey, you, in front of the Burger King, go in. Get fat. Mobile Lime in Watertown, Mass. turns the phone into a mobile membership card that receives coupons and store alerts from grocery stores and fast food restaurants. Me likes. Quote, Boston does have a good technology base, but the fact is we're close to New York as well with the strong advertising companies, says Eric McCabe, vice president of marketing for JumpTap, a Cambridge company that offers mobile search. Wait, there's more. For now, people are pulling ads toward them. clicking on banner ads, reading sponsored search results, or sending short text messages to enter contests and get product information. But carriers who've been hesitant to turn the potentially lucrative cell phone screen into ad space because of concerns over privacy and consumer patience are beginning to test the waters. That's according to Roger Entner, an analyst at Ovum. Where's your dad work? Ovum? What's it to you? Oh, mine works at Scrotum. Sprint Nextel began posting banner ads on its mobile internet homepage last fall. Verizon Wireless has been exploring the possibility of banner advertising, according to a spokesman. We're trying to be very prudent, says Steve Crom, an official for Singular. The big question is, are users going to find it acceptable to see advertisements and pay for service, too? Yes, that is the big question, sir. Cell phone carriers, which generally know a lot about their customers, are trying hard to avoid the mistakes of the internet. The FCC prohibits companies from sending unwanted spam to wireless devices. It's that damn FCC that Howard Stern complains about. Is that Howard K. Stern? Is that the guy that just only spanks strippers with K's in their names? And telemarketers are prohibited from auto-dialing cell phone numbers. Eventually, a business model could evolve in which consumers opt in to see ads every time they open their phone, but get a discount on content or services, says Entner of Ovum. The cell phone could develop into a medium supported by both ads and subscriber fees, like cable TV. And how good is that? Major advertisers from Ford to the U.S. Navy have begun testing the space with videos, mobile web pages, and mobile extras, such as Fabiograms, promoting I Can't Believe It's Not Butter. I can't believe it's still Fabio. A year ago, a typical ad campaign at Third Screen Media. That's cute. See, your television was your first screen, your computer was your second screen, your cell phone is your third, and your eyeball. A typical ad campaign was $30,000 last year. Today, it's more than $150,000. Last year was about people starting to realize mobile was becoming a legitimate new advertising medium, says Maria Mandel, an official at the Digital Information Group. When you have 220 million plus people with a mobile phone, it's a wake-up call to advertisers that this is a significant way of reaching eyeballs. Also, quote, the phone is a device that can be with the consumer right there in the aisle. That's called the moment of truth, says John Hadle of Procter & Gamble. No, he's a strategic advisor to Procter & Gamble. I got the moment of truth for you, babe. If I see that show up on my phone... Says Sultan of Northeastern University, it's a very, very private space. We've got to be really careful. We? You work for a university. What do you... A question that I can't suppress when I read the trades for you, copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Stole my sweetheart away from that marvelous, even that glorious, the beautiful Lord, Tennessee. Well, I lost my baby, and I to play the song, y'all. My best friend, it walked in, took her right away from me now. Oh, oh yeah, I lost my sweet honey child.
This is Le Show, still. Nothing you can do about that. Ladies and gentlemen, news about the inspectors general. We got to get rid of these guys because they keep coming up with stuff like this. See, how are you supposed to run a government when an inspector general starts nosing around and then Dateline Washington, the Justice Department, has routinely misrepresented the number of terrorism prosecutions, possibly undermining decision-making in the war on terrorism, according to the Justice Department's Inspector General. I want that guy out of here yesterday. He concluded the department in most cases, quote, could not provide support for the numbers reported or could not identify the terrorism link used to classify statistics as terrorism-related, unquote. It's a terrorism-related radio show, ladies and gentlemen. I guess they could include that because I mentioned the word terrorism. All but two of the 26 statistics reviewed from October 2000 through September 2005 were wrong. Two out of 26? That's a good batting. Quote, these inaccuracies are important because department management and Congress need accurate terrorism-related statistics to make informed decisions, said Inspector General Glenn Fine. How would he know? Part of the problem, according to Fine, was that the Justice Department routinely counted criminal cases as terrorism-related, even when prosecutors found no links to terrorism. You sitting down yet? I think we need to be just have a much bigger chair because there's a lot of sitting down we got to do these days. Fine blamed a decentralized and haphazard system. Well, that's what happens when the grown-ups are in charge, don't you think? The Justice Department defended its tracking system and the inclusion of cases that aren't directly linked to terrorism. While such cases often result in convictions for other crimes, their underlying purpose is to prevent and deter terrorist infiltration, said the Justice Department spokesman. Well, you know, anytime you put somebody in jail, it deters something. Don't you think? Are you sitting down yet? Just to introduce our News from Outside the Bubble segment, which is a long segment today, which is not to suggest that we're getting more embubbled here. It's just stuff is happening, partly because it appears that a lot of the reports, one of which I shared with you, I think, a week ago or 2 weeks ago about U.S. plans for war plans against Iran are being deliberately leaked in various places around the world, not all of them in this country, to get the Iranians' attention as opposed to yours. But a reporter for the British newspaper The Independent reminds us that as the British leave Basra, that's where Tony Blair announced he's withdrawing British troops. That's been their little bailiwick. By the way, at the same time, he's increasing troops in Afghanistan. So they're actually going to be committing more troops to the whole fine deal. In 1915, The Independent reminds us, the British swept up from Basra toward Baghdad, believing that the Iraqis would reward them with flowers and love, only to find themselves surrounded at Kut, cut down by Turkish shellfire and cholera. And there's more. Another of Britain's great military defeats took place in the very sands in which soldiers are now going to Afghanistan. The Battle of Maiwand on July 27, 1880, destroyed an entire British brigade overrun by thousands of armed Afghan tribesmen, some of whom the official inquiry into the disaster described as Talibs. Talibs, as in Taliban. No, it's nothing new. That's what's cool about it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Apropos, also from The Independent, when Prime Minister Blair announced Britain's withdrawing its troops from southern Iraq, he sought to convey the impression that the pullout could go ahead because the security and situation in Basra had stabilized, while conceding that this did not mean the city was, quote, how we want it to be, unquote. But Toby Dodge, an Iraq expert at London's Institute for Strategic Studies, says Britain is being criminally irresponsible in abandoning the people of Basra to the ravages of, quote, militias, criminals, and a police force fighting for control. Once the British forces withdraw from Basra, he says, there will be no restraints at all. Others believe Britain has been fighting a losing battle in southern Iraq since the looting and anarchy that followed Saddam's fall and the mission being accomplished. Quote, the British may not have been defeated in a purely military sense, but lost long ago in the political sense, says Anthony Kordsman of the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. And much of what went on in Basra between then and now remained unpublicized because the militias intimidated and assassinated journalists. That's the way to do it. From the Times of London, some of America's most senior military commanders are prepared to resign if the White House orders a military strike against Iran, according to highly placed defense and intelligence sources. The Times of London, of course, owned by Rupert Murdoch. There are four or five generals and admirals we know of who would resign if Bush ordered an attack on Iran, a source with close ties to British intelligence said. There is simply no stomach for it in the Pentagon, and a lot of people question whether such an attack would be effective or even possible. A British defense source confirmed that there were deep misgivings inside the Pentagon about a military strike. All the generals are perfectly clear they don't have the military capacity to take Iran on in any meaningful fashion. It would be a matter of conscience for them. There are enough people who feel this would be an error of judgment too far for there to be resignations, unquote. A general's revolt on such a scale would be unprecedented. American generals usually stay and fight until they get fired, said a Pentagon source. And there's more. America is secretly, this from The Telegraph, a conservative British newspaper, America is secretly funding militant ethnic separatist groups in Iran in an attempt to pile pressure on the Islamic regime to give up its nuclear program. Washington is growing more concerned with the failure of diplomatic initiatives. CIA officials are helping opposition militias among the numerous ethnic minority groups on Iran's border regions. The operations are controversial because they involve dealing with movements that resort to terrorist methods. In the past year, there's been a wave of unrest in ethnic minority border areas of Iran, with bombing and assassination campaigns against soldiers and government officials. Such incidents have been carried out by the Kurds in the west, the Azeris in the northwest, the Ahwazi Arabs in the southwest, and the Baluchis, including Jim Baluchi, I believe, in the southeast. Funding from their separatist causes comes directly from the CIA's secret budget, but is now no great secret, according to one former CIA official who spoke anonymously to the Sunday Telegraph. His claims were backed by Fred Burton, a former U.S. State Department counterterrorism agent, who said the latest attacks inside Iran fall in line with U.S. efforts to supply and train Iran's ethnic minorities to destabilize the Iranian regime, unquote. Just a question, isn't this what we did in Afghanistan in the 80s that led to the resurgence of the Taliban and the birth of Al-Qaeda? Answer, are you sitting down? Much of the intelligence on Iran's nuclear facilities provided to UN inspectors by American spy agencies has turned out to be unfounded, according to diplomatic sources in Vienna. This from the Guardian newspaper in London. Most of the stuff turned out to be incorrect, says a diplomat at the IAEA. With detailed knowledge of the investigations, they gave us a paper with a list of sites. The inspectors did some follow-up. They went to some military sites, but there was no sign of banned nuclear activities. Now the inspectors don't go in blindly. only if it passes a credibility test. One particularly contentious issue concerned records of plans to build a nuclear warhead. The CIA said it found the plans on a computer supplied by an informant inside Iran. U.S. intelligence officials showed printed versions of the material to Atomic Energy Agency officials 2 years ago, and they judged it specific enough to confront Iran. Tehran rejected the material as forged, and there remain reservations about its authenticity, according to officials inside the agency. First of all, said one official, if you have a clandestine program, you don't put it on laptops, which can walk away. He adds, the data is all in English, which may be reasonable for some of the technical matters, but at some point you'd have thought there would be at least some notes in Farsi. Oh, it's Farsi, all right. More? Yes, there is. Glad you asked. The war on terror has radicalized Muslims, this also from the Times of London, Muslims around the world to unprecedented levels of anti-American feeling, according to the largest survey of Muslims ever to be conducted. Gallup's Center for Muslim Studies in New York carried out surveys of 10,000 Muslims in 2005 and 2006. Gallup findings indicate that in terms of spiritual values and the emphasis on the family in the future, Americans have more in common with Muslims than they do with Europeans. ...50% of radical Muslims support democracy compared with 35% of moderates. Are you still sitting down? Religion was found to have little to do with radicalization or antipathy towards Western culture. What Muslims admired most were liberty, democratic system, technology, and freedom of speech. I thought they hated our freedom. What? Say, to Gallup analysts, it's no secret that many in the Muslim world suffer from crippling poverty and lack of education, but are radicals any poorer than their fellow Muslims? We found the opposite. There is a key difference between radicals and moderates when it comes to income and education. Radicals earn more and stay in school longer. Get them out of school. All you can do. Surveys found that radicals were more satisfied with their finances and quality of life than moderates. So we got all of that right. And finally, from the Sunday Age in Australia, they've cost the taxpayer $106 million Australian money. That's nothing. That's chump change, babe. So far, they travel in business class, and over the past 4 years, Australia's armed air marshals have had to act only once, subduing a 68-year-old man who produced a small knife on a plane. The value of having such expensive security in the sky is now being questioned down under. The federal justice minister has defended their use to the newspaper, saying every day without an incident was a successful day for security. There's thought to be about a 1 in 10 chance of being on a flight with an air marshal. There are about 170 of them said to be traveling on international and domestic flights. Critics call for the program to be reviewed. The security head of Virgin down in Australia said air marshals were introduced without consultation, and the airline has yet to be convinced of their value. A spokeswoman for the airline says that remains doubtful about the need for air marshals. The union that represents ground security staff at airports says air marshals have proved to be of little value. The national secretary of the Liquor, Hospitality, and Miscellaneous Workers Union. Enough of the first two, and you'd be miscellaneous too, says the introduction of air marshals was a knee-jerk reaction and a, quote, very dodgy exercise. There's just no evidence, says the national secretary of the union, that it's had any benefit. Our view, he continues, that the way you're going to improve aircraft security is to ensure there are appropriate measures to taken before people go on planes to try and limit what people are taking on planes. The money that's going on air marshals could be used to improve security staffing levels and scanning equipment. But fortunately, we don't have to worry about any of that because we're just fine. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And you know that there's been an enormous amount of attention this week devoted to some very important people. Anna Nicole Smith, you've heard of her. We're still waiting at the Apologies of the Week department for the cable news channels to apologize for that. But they're not going to because the ratings were up. So everybody who complains about it, you sit down. Because apparently it is important. But also Britney Spears, who I believe this week, I follow Britney Spears almost as much as I follow the Oscars. But I know she shaved her head, went to rehab, shaved her head, went back to rehab. And that latter visit would be her third visit. So rehab was in the news a lot this week, of course, as it always is. Basically, just as a promotion for the upcoming off-Broadway musical, Rehab.
So you send improper emails to that tempting little page, and you only find out later that the tramp is underage. Well, you can answer all the questions, dig yourself real deep, or you can check in at the one place where they'll never hear a peep. Welcome to Rehab, Rehab. You can be just as private as the she-crab. It's not a million miles from your neighborhood, but get the Rehab habit, cause it feels... So you got caught driving reckless, and you ratted out the Jews. Now you got a speeding ticket, and those angry agent blues. Well, you can hold one more press conference, and apologize again. Or you can check in at the one place, where silence is your friend. Why not hang out in rehab, more private than wearing the job. It's a place where you live like you know you should. Get the rehab habit, cause it feels re-good. You know Britney took a jitney. Mr. Limbaugh took the bus.
Thank you.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Yeah, Brian Williams can steal it for 1 week, but that doesn't mean I'm giving it up that easy. I'd have to be crazy. Oh, I was just checking to see if I was crazy. Dateline Miami, former NBA All-Star Tim Hardaway apologized again for his anti-gay remarks, telling a Miami television station he didn't mean to say what he said in a South Florida radio interview last week when he said, "I hate gay people." "I don't hate gay people," Hardaway said. "I'm a good-hearted person. I interact with people all the time. I respect people. For me to say hate was a bad word, and I didn't mean to use it." He acknowledged that was very bad. Hardaway was banned from activities at last weekend's NBA All-Star game. And his name is off his South Dixie Highway car wash in Miami. Just after he said he hates gay people, a local gay rights group called for a boycott of Hardaway's US 1 Finest Hand Car Wash. Saturday, a new sign went up. Grand Luke's Auto Bath, B-A-T-H-E. Bath with an E. Yeah, it sounds gay. Popular outdoor writer Jim Zumbo is in hot water with thousands of sportsmen nationwide for comments he made last weekend on his blog about assault rifles having no place in the hunting community. He went on to say, "We don't need to be lumped into the group of people who terrorize the world with them, which is an obvious concern." Zumbo also said, "Game departments should ban them from the prairies and woods." Within hours, the complaints were pouring into the Outdoor Life website and many outdoors blogs. Zumbo quickly apologized, saying, "I was wrong big time," and pointed to his 40-year membership of the National Rifle Association. He's also appeared on the Gritz Gresham National Radio Show, trying to apologize. But Outdoor Life has closed Zumbo's blog. Remington Arms has dropped him from sponsorship. And he's off the Outdoor Life channel. He's indoors! Deadline New York, the studios that released Dreamgirls have apologized to Motown founder Berry Gordy Jr. for any confusion the film generated about the label's early days. DreamWorks and Paramount offered their apologies to Gordy, whose Motown records and experiences are widely thought to be the basis of the film, in ads published earlier this week in Hollywood Trades. Gordy responded with a statement praising them for making sure to separate fact from fiction. I applaud DreamWorks and Paramount for doing their part to clearly differentiate the fictional movie Dreamgirls from the real Motown, says Gordy. I wish them all the best in the forthcoming Academy Awards. That couldn't have been why they apologized, could it? Dateline Greeley, Colorado, the Greeley Tribune has agreed to end a years-old practice of copying stories from competing newspapers and falsely labeling them as Associated Press dispatches, the newspaper's publisher says. That's clearly a very bad journalism practice, Steve Weber, the Tribune's publisher, admits. Says publisher Ed Lehman of the Loveland Reporter Herald. He spotted the practice and asked the Tribune to stop. They apologized, Lehman said. An elusive Dr. Pepper coin was safely retrieved near a two-century-old crypt in a burying ground in Boston. And the soft drink maker apologized and donated $10,000 to the graveyard for its time and trouble. Some city officials in Boston were still angry that a treasure hunt would be planned in the 347-year-old cemetery. It's the final resting place of several heroes of the American Revolution. Dr. Pepper, ladies and gentlemen. The City Parks Department first learned of the 23-city treasure hunt for coins redeemable for up to $1 million after contestants complained that the graveyard was closed due to icy paths. I want to find my coin! Prime Minister of the Bahamas says he's accepted the resignation of his immigration minister. The official stepped down in a flap over his relationship with, here's that name, Anna Nicole Smith. Appearing on state TV, Shane Gibson apologized to the Bahamian people for any embarrassment he may have caused the country. Photos recently appeared in a newspaper showing Gibson in bed with Anna Nicole Smith and embracing her. Both were fully clothed, but the pictures stoked a controversy because Gibson had fast-tracked Smith's application for permanent residency in the Bahamas. I could do it. Dateline New York, a drunken driving case against opera singer Jerry Hadley, who was arrested while sitting in a parked car, was dismissed at the request of prosecutors. Hadley was arrested on Manhattan's Upper West Side in May. A woman had reported seeing him in a drunken state before getting into a car, and he was found at the wheel with the key in the ignition. The Grammy Award-winning singer apologized and said the arrest has been blown out of proportion. Hadley is considered a world-class romantic tenor. Deadline Richmond, Virginia, meeting on the grounds of the former Confederate capital. The Virginia General Assembly voted unanimously this week to express profound regret for the state's role in slavery. Sponsors of the resolution say they know of no other state that has apologized for slavery, though Missouri is considering such a measure. The resolution does not carry the weight of law. You mean it's like a non-binding resolution? By the way, just interrupting the apologies for a moment, all the Republicans who bitched about the wimpiness of the non-binding resolution, was there anything binding about the 1998 thing passed by Congress, the Iraq Freedom Act, that the Republicans often pointed to as, well, it wasn't Bush's idea to get rid of Saddam. The 1998 Iraqi Freedom Act said it was America's policy. Yeah, said it was America's policy and had the binding nature of what? Bananas? Back to the apologies, which continue to fly in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, during the second day of a two-day inquiry into what went wrong during last week's storm that left hundreds of motorists stranded for days on three interstates. I personally apologize to the people, says State Transportation Secretary Alan Beeler, his second apology in a row, for second day in a row. The general consensus seemed to be that no one from the governor down clearly knew what anyone else was doing, leading to many bad decisions. That's called the Louisiana Plan. Deadline Austin, Texas, House Appropriations Chairman Warren Chisholm says he's willing to apologize for giving a colleague a document that contains what the Anti-Defamation League describes as outrageous anti-Semitic material. I'd never be a party to that, Mr. Chisholm said. I'm willing to apologize if I've offended anyone. On Tuesday, he distributed a memo written by Georgia GOP Congressman Ben Bridges to House members' mailboxes. The memo advocated that schools stop teaching evolution and contain links to a website that warns of international Jewish conspiracies. Chisholm said he hadn't looked at the website and didn't realize that he was distributing that kind of material. He expressed chagrin, that he didn't vet the material more carefully or carefully. A New Zealand high school has apologized for giving students a homework assignment to plan a murder and describe how they would get rid of the body, called the O.J. Simpson. No, it's not. The principal of Howick College in Auckland, New Zealand, apologized to the parents of one 14-year-old boy who complained and blamed his teacher for poor judgment. He said the aim was to pique the interest of students reading the Roald Dahl book, Lamb to the Slaughter, in which a woman kills her husband with a frozen leg of lamb and then serves it to an investigating police officer. Wasn't that on a Twilight Zone? Vice President Cheney said Senator John McCain has apologized to Cheney for remarks denigrating Cheney's role in the Iraq War. McCain had no comment. U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad, has apologized for the 12-hour detention of the son of a leading Shiite politician. I said Shiite. And those are the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care what Brian Williams says. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, news of the warm.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Climate change over the past two decades has caused Sweden's tree line to move north at a faster rate than at any time in the past 7,000 years. According to Swedish researchers, who should know, the tree line has moved by up to 656 feet in some places. Trees have not grown at such high levels for around 7,000 years, says a professor at the Department of Ecology and Environmental Science in Sweden. Sweden's climate in the past 20 years was as mild as it had been some 7,000 years ago. While some of the change could be explained by natural phenomena, such as the reduction in global volcanic activity, the trend was clearly provoked for the most part by man-made factors. We can say that 75% of the change is due to the emergence of greenhouse gases, says Professor Leif Kuhlman. I guess the leaf line has moved, too. Thank you so much. And a critical meltdown of ice sheets and severe sea level rise could be inevitable because of global warming. The world scientists are preparing to warn their governments. New studies of Greenland and Antarctica have forced a UN expert panel to conclude there is a 50% chance that widespread ice sheet loss may no longer be avoided because of greenhouse gases. Such melting would raise sea levels by 4 to 6 meters. That's some kind of measurement. It would cause major changes in coastline and inundation of low-lying areas and require costly and challenging efforts to move millions of people and infrastructure from vulnerable areas. Previously, the official estimate in 2001 was that the chance of such an event was not well known, but probably very low. The melting process could take centuries, but increased warming caused by a failure to cut emissions would accelerate the ice sheet's demise and give nations less time to adapt to the consequences. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Proving he's not lost his knack for knowing how to ingratiate himself to the American public, Michael Jackson is likely to convert to Islam, a British tabloid reports this week. That'll help. And in the déjà vu department, the top U.S. negotiator to the six-party North Korean nuclear talks says U.S. intelligence has discerned a pattern of acquisitions in North Korea, including aluminum tubes made in Germany that is, quote, entirely consistent with a highly enriched uranium program. Tell it to Colin Powell, babe. And that is going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Radio Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com, kcrw.com, available on both Sirius and satellite radio, unless they merge, in which case it'll be available on one of them. Available on the giant mighty 104 in Berlin as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow and available as a free podcast at www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like being back in L.A. if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at innerworld.net. LeShow Internet Services by Steve Mack at Tippett. LeShow Chapeau to Bob and Jenny here at WWNO in New Orleans, as well as to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desk. LeShow playlists available at harryshearer.com. LeShow comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Bon voyage!